FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNResources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2/18/19. Well, big news lately. Gold looks like it's on the upswing. And when we look at our Kitco charts right now and understand it's a holiday, so gold is trading someplace. I'm not sure exactly where, but it's right at the $1,326 mark, the ounce. Silver lagging this rally as expected, up 2 cents, but at some point they will switch leadership, no doubt. Is this the start of the big rally that we've been waiting for 7 or 8 years, or is it just more market gyrations? Is the picture for gold really pristine, clear? Hey, as always, what are your thoughts? You think gold is headed up, or is it just going to take a hit? Well, let's find out from John Rubino. John, happy Monday, and we're looking at gold has just shown remarkable strength, especially considering that the stock market has been so strong.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, and the dollar's been up too, which is a kind of an unusual thing. Usually they trade inversely, but the dollar's been stronger and gold has been going up, which is, you know, it's a good sign. And I feel a little bit like Charlie Brown with the football, or maybe even Einstein's definition of insanity, you know, doing the same thing and hoping for a different outcome over and over. But here we are again, approaching that resistance level in the 1350 to 1360 range with gold. And gold has been there 4 times in the last 5 years, and every single time previously, it's gotten smacked back down, and not just a little bit, but fallen hard from these levels. So, you know, the world is such that eventually gold has got to pierce that resistance and then just take off because, you know, and I'll talk in a minute about why everything is so favorable for gold and silver. But here we are again. And it's, you know, it's silly to be excited because the last few times haven't worked out at all. But it does feel like this might be the time. So, and of course, it felt like that in the previous times to me, too. So don't take what I say about short term trading moves in gold and silver as worth anything, because I'm always wrong about what's going to happen next week or next month. But one more week like last week when we're at that resistance level. Well, so this is an interesting time because, you know, eventually it's going through that resistance level. Maybe this is the time. But there are a lot of reasons to think that the environment for precious metals has improved a lot lately. So I'll go through them really, really quickly. But, you know, central banks have been net sellers of gold for the last 5 or so years, but they switched recently to be net buyers. In other words, the European banks that were dumping a lot of gold, which offset the Chinese and Russian buying of gold, the Europeans have scaled back. And in some cases, they're now buyers. So you've got strong net buying of gold by central banks going forward. And they're probably not that price sensitive. Like, it's hard to believe that they're looking at 1350 and saying, oh, got to stop there. You know, that's that's resistance, because they don't really think in those terms normally, especially when they're buying stuff. You know, when central banks buy things like bonds, they don't look at prices. They just have a number that they're supposed to meet. So they just type that number in and hit send. You know, that's the level of their analysis, I think, which can work in your favor if the thing that they're buying, you want to go up. You know, so this is one of those times where it's true. You know, central banks aggressively buying gold adds to the buying pressure out there and might push it through levels that in the past have it hasn't gotten through. Meanwhile, the Fed was really the only central bank that was tightening, and it only tightened for like a year. And then the stock market flaked out in October and November of last year. And the central bank or the Fed started paying attention and started worrying about a global financial crisis starting on Wall Street. So now they have basically walked back all the tightening threats that they had been making. And they're saying now, you know, maybe we're done raising interest rates and we're done shrinking our balance sheet, which sets the stage for them to completely reverse and start cutting interest rates and start buying bonds in the open market again, and maybe equities, who knows. So add the biggest central bank switching from tightening to easing, while the other central banks are still pretty aggressively easing. You know, China in January increased the number of bank loans in its system at the fastest pace ever, which is saying something, because China accounted for 60% of new credit created in the previous 10 years. In other words, they were the debt accumulation engine that drove the global economy out of the Great Recession and into this now almost longest ever recovery that we're having. And Japan apparently is gearing up for an even more aggressive period of easing. You know, one of their central bank executives just came out and said, you know, we need to meet that 2% inflation target. And to do so, we need aggressive deficit spending financed with a lot of new central bank money creation. So you basically have all the central banks of the world now either aggressively easing or getting ready to aggressively ease. And that's just a great environment for precious metals, historically and theoretically. So we're heading into a time like that. And you know that it's already a surprise that precious metals aren't a lot higher given what's happening out there. But now we're at a point where the environment is even better than it was. So it's easy to see precious metals going up. Again, don't take that as anything from a trading standpoint coming from me, because I would have told you something similar the last couple of times. That
both of
precious
us, John,
metals were ready to break through this barrier.
We're the stop clock brigade, you know that.
Yeah, I mean, I am with gold and silver, because I tend to just look at broad environmental factors. And those things do work out in the end, but you've got a lot of short-term trading cross currents in any given market at any given time. So just because something is going to happen eventually over the next 10 years and it's a lock, it's guaranteed, doesn't mean it happens this week. Mm-hmm. But one other thing that I think is very interesting from the point of view of precious metals is that U.S. politics has changed dramatically in the last few years. And now we've got the Democrat Party skewing way to the left. They've got a lot of new people coming in to run against Trump. Yeah. And they have a pretty good chance of winning this time around, especially if the economy slows down a little bit or the financial markets are choppy heading into the 2020 presidential election. So if they run somebody who's an avowed socialist, which there's a decent chance that they will. I mean, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are two of the front runners. And then you've got Joe Biden, who would be the voice of the old guard, you know, the Clintonite centrist Democrat Party that to a lot of Democrats is completely discredited. But he's also in the mix when he announces. But if they go with somebody that's farther to the left than usual, that's also a pretty good thing for precious metals, because you might end up with a government that's going to aggressively increase deficit spending and maybe aggressively raise taxes, which is something that tends to spook capital and send capital flowing into safe haven asset classes, you know, foreign real estate, precious metals, energy assets, things like that will do well in an environment where you've got the government going after the rich in order to finance big increases in social programs. And so we that's not a lock for the US, but it's becoming more probable all the time based on current trends. So to sum up, lots of reasons to think that, yes, that there's a decent chance that gold pierces the 1350, 1360 level and then keeps on going for a while.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, you know, when you look at it, if Trump has to get up and make a statement against socialism ever taking over in the US, you know something is wrong there. And you got AOC, who's a complete and utter moron, but she's a very confident moron. And those are the most dangerous kind, because even though she doesn't have a clue as to what she's talking about, she says it with such conviction, you know? It's really great how certain she is in her stupidity. I mean, look, you just got to look at Venezuela. Some anti-American forces would have you believe that what's happening in Venezuela is all the United States' fault. This is absurd. I'll say what happened before Chavez took over, the U.S. was largely responsible for in many ways, and especially the Bush administration and the Jeb. But the fact is that, forget it. You know, these guys, they're so uninformed and ignorant. And the New Green Deal, now, first of all, or the Green New Deal, first of all, if we go back in economic history, we learn pretty quickly that the good old New Deal was a failure, right? It was a complete and utter failure. It did not lift the U.S. economy out of the Great Depression. And yet, so many of you out there believe that that the New Deal was what saved the country's economy. So if you don't learn from history, there's no way you can avoid repeating history. And that's the situation we're in now.
Yeah. We have really short memories. You know, yes, we're emotional animals with short memories, which gives you booms and busts and recurring political cycles throughout history. I get the socialist impulse in today's world, because it does feel like the country is under the control of a handful of people who are basically sucking wealth from the rest of our accounts, you know, and that's demonstrably true. The rich keep getting richer. So it's normal for people to be looking around for solutions to that. And it's normal for some people to latch on to socialism as the solution, because that's a really direct confrontation of the rich. And so especially young people tend to forget that it's been tried and failed over and over again throughout history. And so I think Trump's greatest hope right now going into the next election is that the Democrats overplay their hand and allow the base, which is always in any political party, the hardcore base is always more extreme than the mainstream part of the party who normally gets nominated for things. Because when it comes time to actually trying to get elected, people tend to move back to the center to try to bring in the moderates who aren't part of either party. So you have that dynamic. But this time around, the Democrats could just be steamrolled by the base and end up nominating somebody that is going to scare a lot of moderates, you know, and make it possible for Trump to get reelected, even with fairly low approval ratings right now. So that's, I think, the Republicans' fondest dream, that the Democrats just go for it this time. And we end up with, Bernie Sanders, who I like as a person. He's a guy who tells the truth about what he thinks. And you have to appreciate that in a politician, because it costs you to do that. But, you know, the things he thinks, while maybe coming from a compassionate standpoint, don't work in the real world.
No,
So if he ends up being the nominee, which is completely possible,
yeah.
You know, that he's one of the three front runners right now with Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, if Joe Biden gets in, that would create a big opportunity for the Republicans to snarf up a lot of independent voters who are scared by the ideas that are that socialists are putting forward. But I don't know. I think the most likely scenario is kind of chaotic. In other words, we aren't going to know how this shakes out for quite a while. And we aren't going to know what it means, certainly not for the election itself until the day before, probably. Mm-hmm. And that's something that financial markets don't really like, you know, that kind of uncertainty, not knowing whether taxes are going to go way up and inflation is going to be accelerated by but you know, the thing is, even if the Republicans stay in charge, we're still looking at $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye could see. So, you know, last time around on your show, I said it really doesn't matter who's in charge. And that generated some irate comments from people who can't imagine how it can't matter, given, you know, the choices that we have right now. But you know what? If you're looking just at debt, just at the debt we're taking on, we're going to take on a lot of debt no matter what. And that's really the thing that's driving the economy towards the cliff that we're headed for. As we keep on borrowing more and more money, and more people conclude that it doesn't matter how much we borrow, so we can borrow even more going forward, that cliff that we're headed for gets closer and closer. And we don't know when we'll go off it. We don't know exactly what the circumstances will be, but, you know, we're heading off that thing either way. And the political turmoil that we're seeing is a direct result of our trip up till now towards that cliff. And unfortunately, all the proposals that are out there from both the right and the left just send us in that direction even faster. So, again, to go back to gold and silver, this is a great environment for precious metals, but maybe a bad environment for everybody else. You know, this is not going to be a fun world if it plays out in a way that sends gold to $5,000 or $10,000 an ounce. Almost nobody is going to like that world, but it's going to be one in which at least you can protect your family's finances from a lot of what comes by being in the right place with sound money like gold and silver and real assets like very well chosen rental properties and overseas real estate and, to a lesser extent, energy assets. You know, you can still set yourself up so that based on history, you'll be in pretty good shape financially, even if the world around you is really chaotic. But that's really all you can do right now, because there's nothing we can do to stop the political momentum. It's going to get chaotic no matter what. There's nothing we can do to stop the financial momentum, because that's going to flow right along with past decisions that can't be revoked now. You know, all the spending that we've taken on, the tax system that's set up. Oh, we didn't even talk about modern monetary theory, which ties in beautifully with the rise of socialism, you know, because that's a philosophy that a lot of people are buying into that says we don't even need to borrow money and we don't need to raise taxes. All we need to do is just create as much money as the government needs, which obviously.
I thought we were doing that already.
We kind of are. That's one of the arguments for modern monetary theory now, is that it just ratifies the current system. You know, it's just a recognition of how we really do things. So let's just cut out all the complexity of today's system and just do it directly. You know, just print the money that we need, give it to the government and let the government run itself, which is really the last stage of a system that's deteriorating into decadence and corruption, you know.
And you know what? That's a question we get somewhat regularly on the show, is basically, why bother with all the tax nonsense and everything else? Why don't we just print the difference? And, you know, the net result, John, might very well be the same. However, then there would be no limitation on spending whatsoever. There is a limitation now, however tenuous it might be and however ineffective it might be. We do have a limitation on spending. And if we were just to print the difference, and let's just get rid of all taxation and just do an inflation tax on the currency, you just print up all the money the government needs and not worry about it, we would have no limitation whatsoever. And the deficit would go up five times what it is now, because the government would then truly turn into just a giant wish fulfillment machine. So that's all the reason you need not to do it that way.
Well, yeah, that's the really obvious fatal flaw of something like that, where the government can print as much money as it needs to run the country. Well, that as much as it needs idea is really squishy. You know, it's if you're letting the government that can create the money define its needs, then, you know, think about what that would be like with your kids if they got to define how much candy they were allowed to eat, or the car companies, if they got to define how many cars people should own, or the banks, which is actually the case today, if they got to define how much debt the average person takes on. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be vastly more than common sense says is wise. And so by turning the government loose like that, you would almost get instant hyperinflation. You know, it wouldn't even take a few years before things just started to spin out of control.
Because there would be no allocation. There'd be no scarcity, no perception of scarcity.
Exactly.
That's the end of it.
You wouldn't have to prioritize in a world like that, which, I mean, you can make that case that that's the way it is today. You know, the governments of the world that can borrow as much as they want and print as much as they want don't have to prioritize. We have cradle to grave entitlement systems at the same time that we have, at least in the US, a global military empire. You know, mm-hmm. normally you can't have both of those things. You know, the old saying, guns or butter. Comes from a time when you actually had to choose between taking care of the domestic needs of your constituents or fighting big wars out there. Now you don't have to choose. You just do both.
Yeah. You can do everything.
Yeah.
Be all things to all people.
Yeah. Which is why we're in the mess that we're in now, which is why debt has soared to absolutely unbelievable levels. And why there's raging inflation in the asset markets. So we are having massive inflation. We're just having it in the categories of assets that benefit rich people. You know, we've engineered it, surprise, surprise, to the advantage of the guys who have control of the monetary system. So it's already happening. You know, we're already in that place. And if we just ratify that place by going to a monetary system in which there isn't even the pretense of creating new debt or having to raise taxes on people. You know, having to borrow money used to be a problem, and having to raise taxes is always and everywhere a big problem. So you take those away from governments and they will just spend like crazy forever.
Yeah.
But see, the one thing they can't control in all this is the value of the currency. They can peg the amount of dollars that exist in the world, you know, to the dollar. They have total control over that, but they can't control the value of each individual dollar. And when the supply exceeds a certain point, people figure it out, you know, figure out that the supply is too high for the current value. And then they start acting accordingly and the currency collapses. That has happened many times in the past. And the result is always the same thing. You know, the currency just falls in value to the point where people stop using it.
Yeah,
and
Venezuela.
Then there's a really chaotic crisis, and then you reinstall some kind of sound money and then go forward.
Exactly so, what we had in Venezuela. So, hey, I just want to share with you some observations of what's really going on in the world here. It was in Vegas for the weekend, long weekend, just to cut loose, have some fun, some laughs. And what I noticed is that the Chinese are colonizing Las Vegas. You see it all over all the games, all the casinos, especially because this was the Lunar New Year celebration. So Vegas pulled in more money this year than the last time it hit this high a take or handle, as they call it. Was in December of 2007, John. So the Chinese inflation is having a salutary effect in Vegas. They're building a new Chinese-themed casino from an outfit called Resorts World. I noticed for the first time that Wynn Resorts was actually designed for the Chinese gambler in mind. The colors, the art, the images, everything else, it's all for the Chinese. And now all the slot machines have got Chinese, Asian, images on them. So I'm telling you now, Las Vegas is being colonized. Pretty soon, you know, an American gambler, you won't even be able to find a place to play because they'll all be catering to the Chinese. You'll have to go like off the strip or downtown to the scuzziest casinos on the planet. And that's where you'll be welcome because you're going to be thrown out of the casinos on the strip. The other thing, the nickel and dimification of Las Vegas is complete. Like they nickel and dime you for everything, John. I got a hot dog. And I forgot to ask for sauerkraut. They charged me $1 for sauerkraut on the damn hot dog. It was almost as much as I paid for the hot dog. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me here. Now, it was only a foot long Nathan's hot dog. So it was $2.50, but still 40% more for a spoonful of sauerkraut. And this is a bizarre, crazy example. But, John, it's taking place all over that city because less people are gambling, but everybody wants to go to Vegas for some reason that I will never understand. But I'm telling you, it's going to be Macau in the, you know, of the West, of the Western United States. You just won't see, I mean, so much of the help. And the main three casino enterprises they were talking, MGM, Venetian, and Wynn, the three largest with one exception, which is Caesars, all have major casino holdings in Macau, which means most of their money is coming from Chinese profits, both at home and abroad. And their casino, the Venetian Casino in Macau, is the largest casino there. So all these are Chinese companies, effectively. They've become Chinese companies. And so just another sobering perspective on the transformation of the country. Like you said, they can have Vegas and probably not a bad idea. Nothing gets produced in Vegas. It just gets consumed.
So, Kerry, you're flying to Vegas for the weekend and eating footlong hot dogs.
Yeah,
I did. Doesn't sound like a very healthy lifestyle.
I did.
Know.
Hey,
well, you're working out after you got back.
Oh, I worked out. Yes, definitely worked out. No, they were good hot dogs, I got to tell you. It was in a real dive, you know, like you eat fine food the entire time. You got to go someplace to a dive and really just pig out. So, but that's, yeah. You know, the world is changing. And I think we're headed towards what I call, John, the new economy. There was a book by Michael Lewis called The New Thing. And then we had, for the past 10 years, we've had the new economy. That was like you go to college and you don't really, you just run up debt and you just get a degree and then you can't get a job, right? So college, that kind of symbolized the whole era. But now we're going to the new economy. And I'm not sure where that's headed, John, but it's something totally different than what we've been encountering for the past decade. That much I am certain of.
Yeah. To go back to the Chinese money flowing into the U.S., with Chinese banks creating new credit at a rate of about $6 trillion a year, which is, even for China, that's a huge rate of credit creation, there's a lot to go around. You know, so we're not necessarily seeing aggressive capital flight out of China. You know, they have plenty of money at the rate that they're creating new loans to invest at home and to move money overseas all over the place. So this is a sign of a credit bubble that, you know, because it's coming from overseas, it doesn't feel like it's happening here necessarily. It's just, oh, more Chinese people in Vegas. But this is a global phenomenon. China is creating huge amounts of new credit and then taking the proceeds and investing it everywhere. You know, the whole Belt and Road thing is basically China lending money to other countries in order to help the countries develop. And then if the development doesn't work, the Chinese just step in and take the airport or the port or whatever. So it's kind of, it's vendor financing for them.
Yeah.
As we've talked about in the past, vendor financing happens a lot at the national level of different countries, and it never seems to work out. You know, that's what Germany did by lending a ton of money to Italy and Spain. And now they're regretting it. And now you're seeing China do it around the world. So a lot of this is almost by definition malinvestment, meaning it's going to blow up on them. Which is yet another reason to worry about what happens in the next few years, because if China is creating trillions of dollars of new, largely malinvested debt out there. That just makes the next crisis that much more serious. You know, that they're kind of trying to stop the credit bubble that they created in the past from blowing up by creating an even bigger credit bubble, mm-hmm. which, you know, we know from history and common sense that that really doesn't work. That's like maxing out new credit cards to maintain your lifestyle. And it's fun while you're doing it, but eventually you get a ton of credit card debt that is going to step up in rate really quickly as soon as you miss a payment and everything blows up on you. Well, China sounds like they're doing the same thing.
They're the loan sharks.
$1 trillion scale.
They're the loan sharks. Hey, but seriously, they did the same thing in the Bahamas. They were financing all these casinos, mega resort. They even sent their own laborers there, Chinese Export Import Bank. Then the casinos all go bankrupt. Now the Chinese own them. I always thought that that deal was just a way to get money out of China, that they wanted that place to lose. They knew it was going to be a loser, and it was created accordingly. And it hasn't disappointed. But anyway, that's it for this week. Make sure you go over, check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Check out us, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. John and I do this most Mondays. You'll find us here. Hey, send us an email if something moved you today. The address is kl@kerrylutz.com. And John, we will catch up with you same time next week.
Thanks, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.